Welcome to the My Money Podcast, number 95 from helpmetosave.com. I'm Karen Bryan, editor of the Help Me To Save website, where you'll find tips to help you save money, spend less, and enjoy life. In this edition of the My Money Podcast, I'll discuss three recent articles from the Help Me To Save website. They are Why I'm Glad I Bought an Annuity Despite Forthcoming Changes to Pensions, How to Save Money by Regularly Reviewing Services, and the Inclusion of Peer-to-Peer Lending into NISAs. So starting off with Why I'm Glad I Bought an Annuity Despite Forthcoming Changes to Pensions. Now, these changes will allow you to take your whole pension pot as cash, subject to income tax after the 25% tax-free lump sum has been taken. I used my personal pension pot to buy an annuity, which is an income for life, as soon as I was 55 earlier this year. As it's a big decision to take, which if you buy a life annuity can't be reversed, I did a lot of research and consulted an online independent financial advisor. A few months on, I'm happy with my decision to buy an annuity, and below are the reasons why. It's great to have a guaranteed income for life. As I'm self-employed, my earnings can fluctuate, so it's great to know I have a guaranteed income for the rest of my life. I bought an index-linked annuity, which means that my income will go up every year by the rate of inflation, measured by the Retail Prices Index, which is generally quite a bit higher than the Consumer Price Index, which is being used for quite a few pensions now. I was very tempted to go for a level annuity, which pays out the same amount every year, as the initial payment was more than 60% higher than I got with an index-linked annuity. But then I thought, what if inflation is high? The income from the annuity could be almost worthless in 30 years' time, when it's less likely that I'll be able to work to top up my income than now, when I'm 55. At 85, well, you never know, could be really healthy and still working, but it's less likely. In order to make the decision to go for that inflation annuity, paying a lot less than the level annuity, I really had to sit down and think, what was a pension for me? What did I want to get from it? And for me, it was about securing a steady income which would maintain its spending power throughout the remainder of my life. I also thought if I got a higher annuity payment now from the level payment, that I'd pay more tax. So, difficult decision to make, and who knows if it was the correct decision. Who knows what inflation is going to be over the next few years and even decades. Now, the other advantage of having bought an annuity is that I'm no longer paying into a pension. My annual payments into my pension pot were eating up a fair proportion of my income. Now, not only do I have the guaranteed income from the annuity, but my outgoings have significantly dropped. If I do want to keep saving, I can use a more flexible, tax-free new cash ISA, the NISA, which now has an annual limit of £15,000, much more than I'll be able to afford to pay in every year. Now, there are different tax advantages for pensions rather than from ISAs or NISAs. With a pension, you can get tax relief on the money you put into the pension, but apart from the 25% tax-free lump sum, depending on your other income, you may be liable to pay income tax when you take money out of the pension, either through drawdown or an annuity. Whereas with a cash ISA, you don't get any cash benefit when you put the money into it, but it's when you take the money out, it's tax-free. And of course, you can use ISAs for stocks and shares if you want. I'd probably just go for cash ISAs because I had enough of a roller coaster ride with my personal pension pot being invested in the stock market, but much higher average rate of return from the stock market than from cash savings. So you really have to look, make your own decision, go for higher potential profits, more risk, or a lower return with your money being guaranteed. Again, it's a very personal decision. Now, another advantage to me about having bought an annuity is I don't have to monitor my pension pot. I'd set a target for the size of my pension pot by my 55th birthday. I'd exceeded the target set for the value of my pension pot by 10% a few months prior to my 55th birthday. Now, this was down to luck, in that the stock market grew steadily when my pension pot was at its biggest. A few years ago, although I was paying in money every year, when I received my annual statement one year, the value of the pension pot was quite a bit less than the previous year, despite me having paid money into it. So I just thank my lucky stars that the pension pot grew a lot when it had the most money in it. Now, it was again a difficult decision to make, whether I wanted to lock in these gains to make sure that my pension pot remained 10% above its target, leave the money invested in stock market based units in order to potentially make a higher return, or just lock in the gains and forget about making any more over the few months before I was 55. Now, I did a lot of research. I read quite a few reports suggesting that stock market growth was unlikely to be sustainable. Therefore, I made the decision to lock in my gains by de-risking my pension pot and moving it to safer investments. I did find it quite nerve-wracking watching the ups and downs in the value of my pension pot and trying to decide when to shift into cash funds. Between a pathetically low rate of interest and fund charges, my pension pot lost almost 1% in value over the months in the run-up to my 55th birthday. Now, that was really, really annoying, because I could have earned a higher rate of interest with no charges if I'd had the equivalent of my pension pot in an instant access savings account, particularly if it was an ISA account. But because it was a pension and it was before my 55th birthday, I was forced to keep the cash in a pension fund. Now, I don't understand why a cash fund, you know, cash pension fund, can't offer you similar rates to one as a standard savings account, and if the charges weren't so high, at least you wouldn't be losing value when you keep the money in a cash fund. So that's the dilemma of the pension. Keep it in a safe home and you're not even keeping up with the rate of inflation. Put it in stocks and shares, higher potential return, but you have to pay charges which eat into your return, and the gains aren't guaranteed. As things turned out, I could have had a slightly larger pension pot if I kept my pension pot in the stock market related units, as stock market growth did indeed continue. However, I don't regret my decision. It's very easy to be greedy and get lured into potential gains and possibly lose current gains. If I decided not to buy an annuity, I wouldn't have been keen to leave the pension pot invested in the stock market related units. Although, as I mentioned, that option had the highest potential growth, there was the risk of loss. What might have encouraged me to leave my pension pot invested and do income drawdown, take a bit of money, especially if I could not have to pay too much tax, is I'd like to see an index-linked pension fund, where that fund would retain the spending power of my pension pot even after charges, and that would have definitely encouraged me to leave the pension pot invested, knowing that it would maintain its value and maybe take a small income from it, or just leave it and maybe buy an annuity a year or two later. Decisions, decisions. However, the thing with income drawdown is I would have been unsure how much to withdraw as income from the pension pot each year. If I withdrew too much income, I'd risk not having enough left in the pot to provide an income if I lived for longer. If I withdrew too little, I wouldn't get the full benefit of the pension savings. So, in conclusion, whilst consulting an independent financial advisor was very useful to me, because they were able to illustrate all the options, at the end of the day, you still have to make and live with the decision to buy an annuity, because there's so many variables. And despite being fairly knowledgeable and interested in personal finance, I found the whole process really complex and confusing. So many unknowns. For example, if the state pension is means tested in the future, then I'll think, oh, why did I bother saving into a pension? I don't know how long I'll live. I've looked at all the tables and my projected age is 88, but I could live for less, could live for longer. And as I mentioned earlier, what is the future rate of inflation going to be? Maybe I've paid over the odds to have an index linked annuity because inflation's not going to be that high. Some experts recommend going for a 3% annual increase and setting some of that aside to compensate for any years when inflation is above 3%. But I just think it is far too complicated and confusing. But I'm glad I've made my decision. I'm glad that my pension pot grew when it was at its largest. I thought I got a reasonable annuity rate, and now I can forget it and just concentrate on working part-time. Now, the next article I'll discuss is how you can save money by regularly reviewing services. Now, you can save money by being on the ball, always looking out for deals and accessing services that you no longer use or need. With so many household bills now being paperless, so you don't get a physical bill to look at every month or every quarter, and they're paid by direct debit, so unless you're constantly monitoring your bank account, you're not really aware of what's going out, and then you have auto renewals on insurance policies, it's really easy to keep paying out too much for your living expenses. But you can reduce your living costs if you just keep focused, and I'll give some examples recently for my experience. I've been paying $3.50 a month for BT Call Sign. This service gave me an additional phone number. When this number is called, it's a different ringtone, so I knew that when a certain ringtone, that was business calls. So this was great to have a separate business phone number without paying for a second line. However, as I'm an online publisher, most of my communication is carried out through emails, and as I have a mobile phone, I decided I would just scrap BT Call Sign and give the mobile as my business number. Now again, not a great amount, $3.50, but why be paying it out if you don't really need the service? When our home insurance was due, I saved £34 by getting an online quote instead of accepting the renewal price from Direct Line. I just don't think it's fair, insurance companies. They're just hoping that with auto renewal, you don't pay attention and they can whop a few more pounds on your premium. Whereas I've been online, even when logged into the site as an existing customer, got a new quote, and it can be 30, 40, 50 pounds cheaper. So it does pay. And even the lower quote, perhaps some other insurer has a special deal on at the moment, so it's worth comparing other quotes. And I did do that even after I got the new quote from Direct Line. There was a cheaper home insurance cover with eSure, but when I looked at all the fine print, the Direct Line Plus cover offered a higher level of cover and included annual worldwide travel insurance. So you can also boost your savings by purchasing all types of services through the links on a cashback site such as Top Cashback. But my advice is to only use cashback sites once you find the best deal, as the payment of cashback is never 100% certain. Look on it as an additional bonus, but don't be lured into buying an insurance policy or a washing machine because you're getting a lot of cash back, because sometimes there's problems with tracking, sometimes there's disagreement over the percentage of cash back you'll get back. But I do reckon that making the time to research deals and going online to check your recent bills and direct debits can definitely save you money. Now, the final article that I'll discuss is the inclusion of peer-to-peer lending into NISAs. Now, earlier this year, the UK Chancellor announced a big shake-up in tax-free ISAs, individual savings accounts, and the new ISAs, dubbed NISAs, new ISAs. So, from July 2014, the annual subscription limit was increased to £15,000, and transfers either way between stocks and shares, ISAs and cash ISAs were permitted. Another change due to be implemented early next year was the inclusion of peer-to-peer lending into NISAs. Now, peer-to-peer lending is a way of lending money to individuals or businesses that bypasses banks or building societies. The peer-to-peer lending website provides an online platform through which loans are made. They charge a fee to lenders and borrowers. The rates of interest after fees paid to lenders are generally higher than paid on traditional savings accounts. Although peer-to-peer lenders have various mechanisms in place to minimise the risk of default, for example, funds which are set aside some cash to cover bad debts and the vetting of loan applicants, the money which you invest isn't guaranteed. The minimum investment for most peer-to-peer lending is generally quite low. It can start from £10. You can select the period of investment, which varies from 1 month to several years. The government is still to announce specific details on how peer-to-peer NISAs will operate. I assume that you will be able to hold a mix of cash, stocks and shares and peer-to-peer NISAs and transfer funds between the different types of NISAs. The benefit of peer-to-peer NISAs and all ISAs is that you don't have to pay income tax on interest earned on the money invested up to the annual limit of £15,000. But you do need to be aware that money invested in peer-to-peer NISAs isn't covered by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. This guarantees that savings of up to £85,000 per recognised institution will be reimbursed if that institution goes bust. From the 1st of April 2014, the Financial Conduct Authority began regulation of peer-to-peer lending websites. All providers must comply with the rules, such as making potential lenders aware of the risks and keeping client money separate from company money, and these rules must be adhered to by the 1st of October 2014. So that's the end of this edition of the My Money podcast. I do hope that you find it useful. You can read all our articles in full on the website at www.helpmetosave.com. You can subscribe to the My Money podcast in iTunes. So thanks for listening and do join us again soon. Goodbye.